Thank you kindly, David Frost here, and I have with me three savants who'll provide the cascade of comedy we call Pull the Other One. They are Frank Carson, Ken Dodd, and Dame Hilda Brackett. Our other contributors, of course, are people round the world who've heard of odd situations and odd predicaments. For instance, the curious case of retired Army officer John Rogers. For 20 years, he employed a servant whose main task was to knock on his bedroom door at 6 every morning and enter with a message. Immediately thereafter, Rogers would go back to sleep again for another 3 hours. Now, that sounds odd, isn't it? What was the explanation? Well, Captain Rogers' morning call stemmed from his long years in the Army as ADC to an insomniac general. The general rose at dawn every day and, needing someone to nag and get at, would send his batman to rouse poor old Captain Rogers with the words, "General Page wishes to see you at once." And the poor old captain, every day of his life, had to drag himself from his bed. So, when he retired, Rogers had his manservant wake him at 6 each day with the same message. But now he was then able to reply, "Kindly tell the general to go and stuff his head up the cannon." And then he went back to sleep again. Happy ending.
Before we go any further, Mr. Foster, can Mr. Carson and I, can we greet Dame Hilda?
You can.
Dame Hilda, because we very rarely get aristocracy. We've never had aristocracy on our show before. Dame Hilda, welcome.
I am delighted to be here with you.
When we, Miss Carson, I pass through your little village, you want a trust, something to do with the trust?
Spectrum Trestle.
Ah, yes, Spectrum Trestle, yes. And you were having the garden fete that day. So
we were indeed. Thank you for the pot of jam.
Thank you very much for the pot of jam.
Yes, you opened it with your teeth.
No, I gave it to the... I gave it to the bulldog next door.
And he opened it with his teeth. Uh-huh. Yes, I see.
Well, he can't get his teeth open, actually.
I think it's a very lovely day for us on Pull the Other One, because if you remember, Mr. Frost, it's the first time we've had a lady on the show.
Indeed.
A title lady on the show.
Indeed.
Although I could use my title if I so desire.
What's your title?
My title is N.
Not the one the woman next door calls.
No. It's NWYWWAHBE.
Are you one of those, eh?
Yes. Never wash your windows with a hard boiled egg.
All them are you ding dong dangle in the dirt.
Yeah, and I'd like to apologize to, I think, Dame Hilda, when we met earlier on.
What, you mean the greeting you gave me, kissing me on both cheeks while I was tying up my shoes?
Yes.
Dame Hilda, I'd just like to say how
delighted Mr. Carson and I are to have you with us in this intellectual discussion, and just to say how lovely you look.
Oh, that's very sweet coming from you, Dame.
I know it's probably presumptuous of me, but what year did you come out?
To finish the credit?
What year do you go back?
He's such a sweet man, isn't he?
Were you a Jeb?
I was indeed, yes. You realize his bed's spelled backwards, but I did. I did come out at the Dorchester.
Really?
All the balls are held, you know.
Yeah, I see.
An occurrence for the noise at night?
Are you a member of any hunt at all?
Funny.
Are you a member?
Do you
ride with hounds?
Well, I ride when the offer's there, I lean towards the Beaufort, you see. Yes, I do.
The Beaufort. Yes. Is that the same as side saddle?
No. You know, my grandmother used to ride side saddle.
Really?
Yes, and she fell off a bike ever so many times.
You know, Lady Godiva was the first one to ride side saddle without any clothes on through the main street of Coventry. And the people down one side were all shouting, "Hooray for our side!"
Yes.
Having welcomed Dame Hilda, and as she deserves, we come to our first tall tale. This is where we only tell you half the story and we see if you can find out the explanation. This was an event in the north of England. The question is this: what was the fate of the army parachutist who dashed while taking part in a team drop in Yorkshire dash, was blown off course and found himself descending towards a lady's garden. He was blown off course and found himself descending towards a lady's garden.
All out
in what happened to this reckless fellow?
Well, as you know, Mr. Frost, I am a next member of the parachute regiment.
Oh, yes. Are you really?
Yes, indeed, I was.
I wouldn't fancy that.
The 1st Battalion of the Parachute Regiment.
Did you know that parachute silk makes wonderful underwear?
Really?
Yes, you've got to take all the string out first.
Because if you pull the ripcord...
Well, you could break your ankle before they ever get to the bomb, you see.
This fellow was
pulling the ripcord and the whole lot would come down to be exposed.
This fellow was parachuting down and it was an evening and he came down between two lovers. Unfortunately, they were elephants.
Well, I can remember the very first parachute jump I'd done, and it was out of a static balloon, and it was at Manchester Airport.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there was two or three planes coming in at the time, and I was caught in a backdraft. And as I was going down, there was a fella coming up, and I said, "Do you know anything about parachutes?" He says, "Do you know anything about gas stoves?"
Well, did you have this relation of Frank Carson? He's an Irish parachutist, and they told him to jump and count up to 10 before pulling the cord. And he's only up to 4 when he dropped his calculator.
I can always remember we were told as we jumped out, we were told to shout Geronimo. And this fella jumped out, and 10 minutes later, it was up on the plane door. And Murphy, it was at the plane, he says, "What was the name of that Indian?"
Dame Hilda, what's your explanation of this whole business?
You mean when he found himself descending into a lady's garden? Well, of course, if it had been my garden, I would have welcomed him with open arms. But, I'm friendly. I like people to drop in occasionally. And I might have had it Vertney, my colleague, who's not here with us tonight, you may have noticed, because there's no funny noises.
You went and Mr. Carson gets going.
Well, we are in dressing rooms next to each other, you know.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
My diddy granddad in Liverpool, in Nottingham, he used to work in a pharmaceutical factory.
Oh, really?
I only said that because I can.
Can you say pharmacopoeia?
No. I'm not very well off on farmers, but he did work in a pharmaceutical factory, and during the war they transferred him to, like you used to, pack tablets, you know, for a living, but then they transferred him to packing parachutes. The only thing is, on the parachute cords it said, "Pull 3 times a day after meals."
And retire immediately.
I think what's happened is, the thing that happened here was, this fella landed in this lady's garden, and she was a fanatical expert on cacti. And he landed...
You only said that because you can, too.
He landed on his selection box on the cacti, and she was probably had to get a pair of pincers to pull out all the prongs.
Well, not quite.
She was hanging out her washing then.
Ah,
so was that it?
Like
not
it.
Quite.
And he Jim actually...
She was spraying.
The line
she was spraying out with some stuff.
This lady of mature years, whose name was Mrs. Entwistle, was busy gardening, not hanging out the washing, gardening, and didn't see this chap until he landed silently beside her. However, when she noticed the unexpected intruder, it reminded her of all of her wartime fears of Nazi paratroopers. So she hit him over the head with a spade.
And then said, "Good heavens, my man, what time do the atrocities commence?"
Does Peggy Ashcroft know you do an impression of
him? Well, here's another one. The great actor, talking of Peggy Ashcroft, onto a great actor, John Barrymore, who once saw comedian Jimmy Durante in Cabaret and was so impressed, also inebriated, that when they met afterwards, he suggested Durante should play Hamlet. What was Schnozzle Durante's reaction?
I would think Schnozzle would say, "Straight away, I'm a non-smoker."
Ah.
He wouldn't smoke Hamlet.
Durante would have said, "Alas, poor Yorick, I knows him well."
All right.
Yes.
Now, I remember playing the lead in The Merchant of Venice.
I saw you in that.
It was very good. It's Stratford and Evering.
Oh, no.
Bernard Manning played the lady standing on the balcony and dry.
Is that the one where you get your feet wet?
He was absolutely marvellous, Manning.
Not many people know, but Jimmy Durante was Jewish and he refused to play Hamlet because he thought it wasn't kosher.
Dame Hilda,
I'll never forget the first day I gave forth with a magnificent Shakespearean soliloquy.
People
were amazed. I was in a chip shop at the time.
I saw you as Malvolio with your cross garters.
Yes, I remember.
In Liverpool, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yes, I remember you there.
You played the part of Shadow.
What do you remember?
Mr. Dodd, you mean, as Malvolio. Oh, he was excellent.
Yes.
He held that stage. You know what? Because I was only about the night in the audience. And he held that stage. We both were thrilled.
All you have to say is gadzooks, not socks.
Yes.
I don't. Frank Carson once turned down a role at Stratford, didn't he?
That's true, yeah.
He was in the station buffet at the time.
Well, I like the fact that I'm working on my own play at the moment. I hope Dame Hilda and Mr. Frost. I haven't asked you yet, Kenneth, because there's no part in it for you, and I'm writing my own play now.
I can take the whole thing.
What sort of play is it?
It's about a young Irishman who's shipwrecked on a desert isle, mm-hmm. and the only thing he has to keep in company is an Irish jigsaw puzzle.
Tahiti.
And there's only two pieces. But he can't work it out because he's lost the lid of the box. A young lady is washed ashore,
mm-hmm.
and it turns out to be Dame Hilda wearing a beautiful sequined evening gown. I'm looking.
Oh yes, I've got one of those.
Have you? Well, that's yes, me buying props.
The Barrymore. I started off doing Lionel Barrymore impression.
I'm so glad you stopped doing it.
Nobody here remembers him at all.
What is wrong with a comedian? I mean, what is wrong with a comedian playing Shakespeare?
Nothing.
Humour is a wonderful thing. To a child, a comic is the beano, the dandy.
Aye.
To someone a little older, humour is a good joke.
Yes.
To a lorry driver, humour is a 60-mile-an-hour speed limit on a motorway.
Yes.
When he's right up behind you.
Yeah. And a Yorkie-born eats drug.
Oh, dear.
What do you think about Jimmy Durante, Dame Hilda, here?
I didn't see him in Cabaret. When I saw Cabaret, I think it was Judi Dench.
Cabaret?
Yes.
Was Jimmy Durante in
that? But I didn't see him in it. John Barrymore was in Cabaret.
A lot of people didn't know. Had I known there was going to be music here, I'd have brought my mouth organ.
Well, friends, Jimmy Durante's response, in fact, to this was simple. When he was invited to play Hamlet, he said, "To hell with these small towns, I'll go on playing New York."
I read in the paper the other day that Dolly Parton wants to play Juliet in Romeo and Juliet. She can't act, but by Jove, can she hang over a balcony?
Right. That leads us to On the Spot. This is the point where we put our gurus here into a tricky situation and see how they can cope with it. Their nightmare for this week is as follows. You put off an unwanted guest by ringing him a week before his visit and telling him that you have a serious and highly infectious disease which will keep you in bed for a fortnight. The next day, you answer the doorbell, and there is your unwanted guest with a bunch of flowers, insisting that he doesn't mind about germs, and he's here to keep you company. And as if that isn't bad enough, you've got some explaining to do, because in half an hour, people will start arriving for your party, to which you have not, of course, invited him. What do you do? What do you say, Dame Hilda?
Well, I think if somebody I wasn't, didn't want to arrive, did and had a bunch of flowers in his hand, I'd first of all say, they give me hay fever, take them away. But, of course, being me, I would be prepared, you see.
Oh.
And I'd say, now, I wonder, now, so I'm not very well and can't get out, would you take this shopping list down to the supermarket, you see? And get these things for me. It'll probably take you a couple of days. I'd always be prepared. And I'd have a hat in the hall and everything, just grab it to put on, you see, and say I was just going out to the doctor's anyway.
So a couple of days, dear Hilda, at the supermarket.
Well, you can eat a lot.
Who are you shopping for? The Army, Navy and Air Force.
Well, yes, if they want to come, yes.
Well, I will.
Yes. And the GPO, I don't mind who comes. I like company. It's people dropping in off their parachute, you
say. GPO never comes.
Well, it mentions germs here.
Germs, yes.
Germs. And I know that Frank Carson is the only man in Britain who thinks that Harpic is one of the Marx Brothers.
Yes, well, it's gags like that that put people out of the bed.
Did you know that the people have all sorts of illnesses, and you have to, prevention is better than cure, obviously.
Of course.
Did you know that the English cricket 11 have all had special injections, and that's why they can't catch any?
Well, actually, Dame Hilda really cut out of the box very quick, because she had exactly the same thing. If I seen this person come to the door with a bunch of flowers, I would kick up such a man and say, how dare you come here? That's where I caught the disease, and you know that, and you're trying to make me worse.
Nobody can make you worse, Frank. No.
Not me. No, I was speaking in the third tense.
Now, I think you've done very well to survive all these years after your mother's accident. I think I really do.
Well, I please don't bring it up here.
No, I don't want to, dear. And I would never mention it, but I just think that all credit due to you for fighting your way through it. Yes. I mean, your mother ironing her curtains and fell out of the window, I think that was awful. You survived it.
Well, it was worse than that. She was ironing the curtains one day, and the phone rang, and you burnt her ear with the iron. But I would think as well. You could say that.
A doorbell rings.
A doorbell rings.
The unwanted guest.
Get rid of the flowers and say,
and you tell me that you've got some highly infectious disease. What's the disease called?
It's called. It's called conspiracitis.
It's a dreadful disease because you can eat, sleep, and drink, but you break out in the most horrible rush the moment anybody mentions work.
Well, that was like a friend of mine who had inconsiderasticus.
Oh, no!
Yes,
do you know that? And he had that when we were in Egypt.
Did you?
Yes, it was terrible. Of course, it was working with the British Army, you see.
Well, there's
and
no...
And she got it, because she left her raincoat off.
There was no known... There was no known cure for this.
This person comes to your front door and you don't want to see them. What do you
right.
do? Well, you don't open the door.
If you open the door, you're going to see them straight away,
well,
aren't
no.
you?
You've got to open it. You could pretend to be somebody else. You could say
you're Dame Hilda.
You could say, what are you doing at number 11 Downing Street? Don't you know I'm Nigel Lawson? Say it. Do Nigel Lawson.
Right.
What? Who are you? What are you doing here, man? I'm Nigel Lawson. I'm now...
That's Wilfred Lawson.
I'm now for Snozzle Durant.
Well, I think the best answer we've got there is just don't open the door. That way you won't see him at all. And so it's time now for Agony Aunt's time.
Ooh.
This is where these three wise folk will give advice that will heal a troubled nation. And the first letter, in fact, comes from a young man in Portsmouth, recently married and up against a problem.
Ooh.
He writes, on the first night in our new home, my bride served me a beautiful piece of place with all the trimmings. I congratulated her and said it was my favorite dish. As a result, she's given me nothing but place for the last 3 months. Now I'm sick of it. How can I let her know it's time for a change without hurting her feelings? Dame Hilda.
Oh, dear Hilda, yes, go on.
Well, speaking of a capacity as an agony aunt, which I do...
What is your capacity, Dame Hilda?
Oh, you're about...
Turbines.
No, not quite that much, dear, but with 6 shots.
And a rubber sheet in the bed.
Now, I'm not from Ireland.
I see. In Ireland, they don't have rubber sheets.
In Ireland, they don't have sheets.
Don't have beds, eh?
Fish can be very nourishing, whether you're on your honeymoon.
Good for the brain, you know.
Fish make brains. Yep. Brains make money. Money helps buy more fish.
Is good for the figure. You never see one wearing horses.
It could sustain this man through many years of marriage. I went on a fish diet once, and I had mussels every day, and it improved my muscles. So next week, I'm starting on cockles.
we get lots of letters. In fact, this was another one we had here from a man in Southend who wrote, my wife is very difficult these days and always complains about the housework. This is very unfair. as I do it the best I can. However, let's move on to the next tall tale, friends. Yes. At a car assembly plant in Melbourne last year, there was a fracas between two workers. One was knocked to the floor by the other, and the whole assembly line came out on strike. Just another day in the car industry, you might think. But what was unusual about this incident?
Anybody who's got a Skoda...
A Skoda.
Skoda. Yeah. Do you know how to double it in price?
No.
Fill it up with petrol.
Well, that was my favourite way as a boy at school. We used to bring our Skodas around. Of course, they're only two wheels. You used to put one foot on and hop with the other foot. They're great little Skodas.
You used to work at a car factory once, didn't you?
Yes, I did indeed.
And
I worked
at the very factory. In fact, that's how you got your famous catchphrase.
I was one of the men that put on the wheels at the very end. There were only two of us who put the wheels on out of the plant of about 180 people.
It must have been you then. It makes those Robin Reliance.
Yes.
They've only got three wheels, do they?
Yes, we made the turbo edition of that. One of the lovely things about working in the car factory was, and one of the great men was Henry Ford, whose great quotation was...
There's one behind every bed we sell.
I can make you any colour of car as long as it's black. And I remember ringing him up and I said, Mr. Ford, is it true you can make a car in 3 minutes? He said, yes. I said, I bought it.
Daniel, what do you think happened in this particular fracas?
Maybe there were two women, you see. Possibly. Am I on the right
line?
Yes.
Well, not...
And being in Melbourne, I was in Melbourne recently. Lovely place. I prefer Adelaide, but Melbourne's very nice.
I know a fellow who works at BL. He just bought himself a seaside donkey to take him to the motor factory every morning. It's just the thing. He goes 100 yards, then turns around and takes him back home again.
Yes, I knew a donkey had an IQ, and Blackpool Beach had an IQ of 163.
Really?
And none of the other donkeys would talk to you because nobody likes a smart ass.
I believe this year, instead of the donkeys at Blackpool, they're going to have camels at Blackpool. Camels on the beach at Blackpool.
What did they mean?
I said, what did they give them? Oh, he said, half an hour for lunch, the same as the donkeys. You know.
Well, I don't think you're going to get this one.
I don't think so either.
Because in this incident, while the victim was a man, not a woman, a man, his assailant was, in fact, a paint-spraying robot. When his human colleague pushed him aside, the robot overheated, his chips went out of order, and he went berserk, swinging an arm and felling his workmate.
Yes. Well, that's a wonderful thing.
There's many good old in Australia, no robots.
I read in Forthcoming Attractions, one of those amazing science books the other day, that they're going to have, ladies, really, they're going to have robot men. A robot husband, just three buttons. You press the first button, goes out and washes the dishes. Press the second button, it goes and digs the garden, and so forth.
Here's a nice simple one to end with. How did Gregory, a Moscow parrot, cause great embarrassment to his Muscovite owner? How did Gregory, a Moscow parrot, cause great embarrassment to his Muscovite owner?
This parrot used to fly up to the Kremlin, knock on the door and shout through the letterbox,
"It's Lenin!"
Or you can knock the phone off the hook, dial the doctors and say, "I've got a touch of the Trotskys."
I would think this part would be a very mischievous part. It would actually go up to the Kremlin and do impressions of Ronald Reagan.
I think this wasn't the part at all.
No.
It was a starling.
It was KGB.
Keep going, boy.
It was a starling.
Not a, yeah, it was in disguise, because in Russia you're not allowed to mention starling, you see.
And this parrot is probably in its natural habitat.
Yeah.
He's looking for new furniture.
Well, you're nearly there. You're nearly there.
Yeah.
Gregory, in fact, made trouble for his owner by escaping. That's what the parrot did.
But in Russia, you see, most words end in off.
They do, yes.
Yes,
they did. Because I played there and I've never been back again. In Russian, they told me to go. And then it ended in off as well.
You tune into Radio Moscow now, they've got pop programs like, "Listen, do you want to sell a secret?" I heard it through the salt mine, the red, red grass at home.
I make love to you in the hen house, you will only egg me on. I have an old Russian song. She did it from Tanaskalski, Polskoda Polskalski. Right?
This parrot used to feed himself.
Yes.
He used to suck the seeds. And you know, Russians don't like anybody who succeeds.
No. Well, in fact, what happened was...
It was an Apostolical impersonator. I said it was a minor bird.
Now, what happened was that Gregory, having escaped, was recaptured by a stranger, handed to the Moscow police. The bird kept shouting not only his name and address, but also a series of anti-government slogans.
I wasn't too far wrong, Mr. Frosch.
Not bad.
Anti-government slogans. That's the way to do it. Anti-government slogans.
Well, there was a lovely story of the parrot who was told to look after the hearse, you know, and the coal man came.
Yes, it's good, this one.
Yeah, so there you are. Well, there you are. So I know that everybody out there listening to the program knows it, so why should I tell it?
And that, I'm afraid, is all we've got time for. If you're wondering why there's a giraffe in your neighbour's garden or why the town hall's been painted mauve, let us know and we'll try and work it out. But for now, this is David Frost thanking you all for joining us. On behalf of Ken Dodd, Dame Hilda Brackett, and Frank Carson, Andrew Palmer and Nell Brennan, who devised and researched this epic, and our producer, Edward Taylor. And we hope you'll join us again next time. It's time to pull the other one.
And you can hear that episode of Pull the Other One again at lunchtime on Saturday, 1 o'clock, here on Radio 2. Now then, some tickets for you if you like radio light entertainment. Wise on the Wireless, that's the name of the series. We're recording it at the Paris Studios in Lower Regent Street on the following, well, the next half a dozen Sundays, really. This Sunday, the 3rd, and then the next five after that. Paris Studios, Lower Regent Street, London, SW1. You may get tickets from the radio ticket unit, BBC, London, W1A, 4WW. Or you can perhaps just turn up at the door. Paris, you're not quite sure exactly what the time is, actually. Such information is not handed to me at the moment. However, Paris Studio, Lower Regent Street, send off for some tickets, and I'm sure they will let you know all of that. Later tonight, in half an hour, in fact, is Round Midnight with Brian Matthew. And guests tonight will include American actress Patricia Neal, and also the Times correspondent in Austria, Anthony Clark, who's the director of a new London production of To Kill a Mockingbird, and also John Thompson, taking his weekly look at the press.
Across the UK, listening here at home, or driving in your car, wherever you are, it's your station. Radio 2 from the BBC.
Just after 10:30, time to join Nick Jackson with Star Sound Cinema.